Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Peter Loback. I had the privilege a few years ago of co-writing a book with Dr. Peter Loback. It was something in his mind and his heart for more than 20 years, and by the grace of God, it ended up becoming a national bestseller. The book is called George Washington's Sacred Fire, and when we started the project, Dr. Loback was a Presbyterian minister in the suburbs, the greater area of Philadelphia. By the time we were actually in the midst of the project, he became the president of Westminster Theological Seminary. And Dr. Loback is, I consider him a friend and a tremendous scholar and a voice needed today in this time of great confusion, a time when Time magazine asks the question, is truth dead? And the answer is no. No, it's not, because Jesus lives. Dr. Loback, it's so great to have you on this program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Dr. Newcomb, it's great to be on your program.
Oh, no, you can call me Jerry.
Call you Jerry from now. You call me Pete, okay?
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds like a good deal. Okay.
And it's good to be on Vocal Point and for our friends at the Providence Forum, which is a ministry that is partnering with Jerry in his Vocal Point program. We're launching a podcast, and so we'll be doing programs from time to time together, and we'll be sharing those on our website at the Providence Forum. So Vocal Point, Providence Forum are in partnership in these particular discussions, just as the wonderful book we were able to write together, George Washington's Sacred Fire, was a partnership. So, Jerry, good to be back with you.
Thank you. Now, what is Providence Forum?
Well, way back in the year 2000, about, we started a faith-based ministry to remind the people of Philadelphia in particular that Christian people and a Judeo-Christian value structure, that is the biblical teaching that's so important to the church, was known broadly and widely by our founders. That faith and the biblical connections have been largely expunged from the record as people tell the story of the founding of America. So became our effort to go back to William Penn, the founder of Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, and then the great citizen of Philadelphia, Benjamin Franklin, and then all the founders that came for the Declaration, for the Revolutionary War, and then the Constitution, to show how often and how deeply they were committed to biblical truth. So we've been doing that for, I guess, some 17 years now, and out of that came, I think, our premier work, which is George Washington's Sacred Fire, that you're such a vital part of, Jerry.
Huh. Well, I understand that this George Washington project, the idea of writing a book about George Washington's Christianity, writing a book about his faith, the true faith, was in your mind and heart for, I believe, about 20 years before we actually set pen to paper. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's hard to believe, but way back in 1983, America had what was called the Year of the Bible. It was a congressional law to honor the legacy of the Bible in America. I don't think we'll see anything quite like that again. But in that particular situation, we had the joy of celebrating the history of the Bible and its impact. And so as a pastor in a local little church, I started advertising, this year is the year of the Bible, but every year is the year of the Bible at Bethany Presbyterian Church, and I would put a little quote of a founder, an American, who's saying something about the Bible. And it just so happened, as this was going on, the moderator of our session was a member of the Gideons, and they were passing out children's Bible story books to school kids. And a group that some of you have heard of called the ACLU came to town and said, we're going to sue the school district if they keep doing this. When the moderator came to our meeting of elders to say what had happened, I was appalled. This was the year of the Bible, and they were attacking, passing out children's Bible story books. And so I wrote a letter to the editor protesting. I'd never done that. I had actually just read Francis Schaeffer's important book, The Christian Manifesto, when he talked about how important it was for Christians to speak in the public square. So this was my first foray. Little did I know that when you stick your head out of the foxhole, you get shot at. And so my little article that I wrote trying to argue that our founders were faith-friendly, the Bible is important, and the McGuffey readers and education was based on Scripture in the early years, the man who wrote back from the ACLU said, well, the guy who wrote last week, because this is only a weekly newspaper, He knows nothing about the founding of America. He doesn't understand Madison and Jefferson and the First Amendment. And I was embarrassed. I was angry. But I realized it was possible that my knowledge of the Protestant Reformation, that was my field in which I did my doctoral studies, ran out just about as the Pilgrims and Puritans were setting foot in the New World. Maybe I was wrong. How did I know? I had general knowledge, and so I made a decision. I would go and study this question. And so the very first book I found at the local university library was called George Washington and Religion by a man named Paul Bowler, a very accomplished American historian. This was an award-winning book, and my heart sank as I began to read it, and it said, George Washington was a deist like our founders in general.
What's a deist? Real fast.
A deist is someone who believes that God is remote. He's absent from this world. He created it, but he has no involvement in it. He doesn't hear prayer. He doesn't reveal himself. He's the Big Bang of the Big Bang.
Okay, so it's sort of the clockmaker God of the Enlightenment from 200 years ago.
That's right.
That effect. Okay. All right, go on.
The clock keeps running after a clockmaker makes it, but he's not around. God started it all, wound it up, and he's gone. So I basically accepted this, and I said, well, I guess I was wrong. I've got to read about this. So I started reading this book, and the more I went into it, as he was quoting Washington, I was stunned. I kept hearing biblical language, biblical phrases, biblical ideas coming right out of the letters and writings of Washington. And after going through this book, I realized that Bowler, who claimed that Washington only used the Bible in jest or in humor, was actually a biblically literate man. And it was like an epiphany. It was like the lights came on, and I said, my goodness, either Bowler has never read the Bible or he doesn't really understand George Washington, because Washington is biblically educated. The Bible is saturating his thinking. So that was when I began to say, I've got to study this issue, because no one for some 60 years or more had even entertained the theory that Washington was a Christian man. That was the older view. And so that began the long, arduous process of working through his 30-plus volumes of letters and writings that had accumulated in his lifetime. And so I started tracing phrases like God, Christ, Bible, Scripture, biblical phrases, biblical quotations and allusions. And by the time you and I met, I had this box full of material of notes that I thought I was probably just going to go to my grave with, and my family would burn them in a rubbish heap somewhere.
Oh.
And lo and behold, Jerry Newcomb showed up and said, you know, my good friend Dr. Kennedy said, if you can complete that book in the next year, I'm going to share it with my ministry worldwide. Well, let me tell you, that got my attention and my excitement, and as they say, the rest is history.
Wow. Yeah. Where do I even start? I mean, this is really exciting to me, though. But let's put this in perspective. It's my understanding that the original historians understood George Washington to be a Christian, although there's some questions about that, just some minor ones. But it really wasn't until the 20th century that people began to question, was George Washington a Christian? And then by the 1960s, when Paul Bowler, whom you mentioned, wrote his book, that kind of sealed the deal. And since that time, the scholars kind of felt like, well, George Washington was a deist. And then by the time we published our book 10 years ago, it actually has helped to set the record straight. I mean, I don't want to sound boastful or anything, but at least it's played a part in the George Washington studies, I think. I mean, in other words, you can't just say George Washington's a deist and not look at the facts that we marshal in a 1,200-page book called George Washington Sacred Fire.
Well said, Jerry. I think the key turning point, it seems to me, was back in 1932. That year was the 200th anniversary of George Washington's birth. So I like to remember that Independence Hall, Pennsylvania State House, and George Washington had the same birth date, 1732. And so Washington was always regarded as a Virginian low church Anglican by the people of Virginia that wrote about him in the early years. And his Christian testimony was seen by his earliest biographers. Jared Sparks argued that he was a Christian. The first collected writings was by John Marshall, the second Supreme Court Chief Justice, who knew Washington And Marshall himself had been a deist who was converted to Christianity later in life. And as he went through Washington's writings, he said George Washington is a Christian. So he knew what deism was, and he also knew what Christianity was. And here is a man who knows evidence as a great jurist in the founding of America's law system, says the evidence shows that Washington was a Christian. So that was the view. But when you get to 1932, there's this process of what we call historical revisionism. There was a desire to redefine American history much more in a secular vantage point. The idea of Judeo-Christian thinking was vanishing. In fact, by this time, most of the universities has pushed out the teaching of the Bible from the university and established in its place what we call the departments of religion. And by the way, most departments of religion are operated by non-Christians and sometimes overt atheists. Mm. And so religion is just a sociological phenomenon. It's not something that's held as a religious commitment as a believer in the gospel would hold. And so this need to have Washington as a non-Christian, as someone who did not take their Christian faith seriously, was in the air and was part of the program of the intelligentsia of the early part of the 20th century. And so from that point on, the redefinition of Washington was underway. And as you say, by the time we get to Paul Bowler in the 1960s, it was the received truth of the scholarly establishment in America.
Hmm. Did our book in any way help play a role in this? I mean, I was really delighted when I saw the review in National Review where they were saying, hey, this book ought to at least, you know, make people question the, you know, accepted wisdom, you know, that Washington was a deist.
Well, one of the great things that I really appreciated is that the National Constitution Center here in Philadelphia actually had a debate that was carried on C-SPAN, and there was one of the American...
What year? What year, if I could ask?
This would have been probably 2008 or so.
Okay, so after the book was published, okay.
After the book appeared, yep. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I think Thomas Fleming and I were debating, and the debate really was over George Washington the Christian. And after the debate was done, he concluded by saying, well, you know, I think the debate really has moved from whether George Washington was a deist to what kind of Christian was Washington.
Mm.
And I said, wow, that's the exciting thing. I would argue that he was a sincere, low church Anglican Christian. Maybe he wasn't all that good of a sincere, low church Anglican Christian, but the debate now, as it was in that discussion, moved from he's a deist to, well, let's talk about what kind of Christian he was. And so one of the things that is really marvelous in my mind is that when scholars have to take a look, I think, at our second appendix at the end where we go through just cataloging over 200
I love it.
Examples of where he uses the Bible, you say, now, look at that's a lot. Of, and it comes all the way from Genesis to Revelation. He has a command, I think. We yep. use the phrase, he knew the Bible right down to his fingertips.
Yeah, it's as if you cut the man, he would bleed scripture.
Yeah, that's great. So I think a couple of things that show that we've made at least some impact.
And we have a minute to wrap up.
Okay, well, a couple things. One is that when you go to his church in Alexandria, Virginia, the docents say, now we say he was a Christian, not a deist. We find another example of this when we find different teachers who are willing to at least recognize some of the educational training that was in the Christian rootage of Washington, like Mary Thompson, who's the historian at Mount Vernon. And in Mount Vernon, even the display of his life will include his pew replica and the reredos with the Ten Commandments and the Lord's Prayer, which was part of his church. So they show the Christian element of his life. So we've made some impact, and we're grateful for that, Jerry.
Yes, and we're out of time, but thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Peter Lilbeck, providenceforum.org for more information. And we must give thanks also to Glenn Beck, who actually made the George Washington book a bestseller. Dr. Lilbeck, God bless you. Let's have you on again, and we'll talk more about George Washington and his faith.
Sounds great.